It's that time of day to throw on your favorite movie or stream the best new show. And most importantly, it's time to sit back and relax with Raisin Bran After Hours, where we take a closer look at the shows and movies you may or may not know, as well as all things creative.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Raisin Bran After Hours podcast, the official podcast of Pixel Labs, where we bring you all things creativity and how it bridges the gap between creatives and marketing and clients and things like that. Today, I'm joined by Micah Versman, who is a creator like we are here at Pixel Labs, who owns and operates Moving Visual Films, but I will gladly let him do the introduction on that. Micah, how you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So I guess real fast, do you just want to give everyone a quick background on what your production company is? Just real quick pitch.
Yes. So Moving Visual Films is what I would describe as a cinematic commercial film company. So we focus on creating the more narrative type of promotional material for websites, social media, things like that. As opposed to some of your more standard commercials.
Cool. So I guess, viewing your page and stuff, I can see a lot of very cinematic appeal. Like, even if it's something as simple as what most people would consider something as simple as a commercial, you kind of go the extra mile and make it more of a production value where it's like, it almost feels like a movie, but there's a product or something that's being showcased. So I guess getting into it, when did your love of storytelling kind of start? Like, when did this start to like really become who you identified as a storyteller?
Yeah. So I always liked telling stories and writing stories, even back in like first and second grade. And so it started out with me just writing them. And then, you know, once I was old enough to use the family video camera, that's when it started becoming movies that I was making with my friends and toys and everything. And it's just continued to grow from there.
That's awesome. So at about what age were you able to start actually being able to cognitively use a video camera and not just wave it around aimlessly?
That's a good question. I think I was like between 9 and 10 when my parents finally trusted me with it. And you know, back then we still had the ones that had like the small VHS tapes in on it. It was before the digital age.
Classic.
So I know what it was like having to fast forward and try to edit out all the bad takes.
That's awesome. So we've talked to previous filmmakers and stuff. One that comes to mind who was in a very similar situation to that was our good friend Terrell Christie, who does stuff in Des Moines and does a lot of short film stuff. And he kind of talked about how, a lot of his first stuff was about, using the VHS recorder and things like that and all that kind of thing. And just essentially he chalked it up to the short films he would make were like spoofs or kind of something where he would take a concept that he liked and just twist his own story out of something that's already created. Would you say that you went with more of that route when you were younger? Like you grabbed or gravitated towards like superheroes or characters you knew and just kind of created your own story with them? Or were you coming up with original content at a young age?
Yeah, no, for me, it was definitely taking a world or characters that I knew, you know, and either read the comic books or whatever, and just made my own adventure with them. I think it probably wasn't till late middle school that I finally started doing stuff on my own where I was like creating the characters and everything from scratch.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, that's usually how it goes. That's you started a lot earlier than I did. That's for sure. So I guess kind of going off of that though, what is something that, or what's maybe one of those very, very early short films or like little pieces of content that you maybe, do you remember any of those or like what maybe like stands out as like a classic childhood memory of like creating a short film with friends and stuff with the old VHS camera?
Yeah. So I think my favorite one would probably be some of the early ones was actually just me and my sister and we would like choreograph like lightsaber fights to the Star Wars, you know, soundtracks or other movie soundtracks. So those were just really fun, you know, getting to do it with my sister, but then also already learning like how to edit things, you could almost say, to music, and see how that can really affect a film. So those definitely hold a special place. And then, I mean, then the very first one I did where like I actually wrote the story and really tried to plan it out is the other one that just stands out, because it's like, yeah, it's terrible, but it's like
as many first are.
Yeah, but it was one of those where it's like, I don't know how we actually got it done, but we got it done, and that right there makes it good.
There you go. Critically, it might be viewed as bad, but emotionally and through the whole process, it's something that just, it'll always be there.
Yes.
It'll always hold a special place, which we love. There's always content. Like, I feel like even professionals who are making these huge budget movies, they get horrible, like, maybe critic reviews or maybe even audience reviews, but then their response back is, we just had so much fun making it. Like, I don't even care if this made, like, not even half the money back or if I ever work again. This is just fun.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I guess kind of going off into that point of the more looking at famous people, and you were talking about how you choreographed like lightsaber fights and things like that. So you're very into the world of film at a young age and movies at a young age. So what are some of the famous works that maybe inspired you creatively as either a young person growing up into this world, or even now, like, what do you gravitate towards?
I don't necessarily know when I was getting started what exactly really inspired it, other than just the movie magic part. Like, my favorite movies from the library were always the ones that were like the 2-disc special editions with all the behind the scenes, and I would watch those way more than I would ever watch the actual movie. So I think getting started, it was just like seeing how it all came together. And nowadays, I guess for me, I'm finding a lot of the ones that inspire me more are the franchises in that where they're building out these worlds and telling the interconnected stories and seeing how all that can work and flow together and just give you so many more opportunities and avenues than if you're just telling one story in a feature film.
And that seems to be where a lot of film and television is going. I know just recently announced, I'm not sure how into this series you are, but that the Avatar, like Last Airbender series, just announced their own production studios to start building out the world of like that cartoon of like Avatar the Last Airbender and stuff. And then obviously we got the Marvel universe that's ever expanding, and now even more so Disney Plus and Star Wars. So I guess what out of those, not out of the ones I just listed, but out of the worlds that are growing or have already been built out, what do you think is like your favorite to explore or to watch?
In some ways, I think I would say Marvel, because I never grew up a Marvel fan. I started watching it simply to see how they were crafting this story between, you know, all these films, and now they're going into television. And so I came into watching those films with a very different viewpoint, but then also knowledge of the universe than so many of the fans were.
So a very critical fan, a very critically analysis fan. That's awesome. And that's super cool to hear and stuff. And obviously, yeah, that's how stuff gets made, and it's just people analyze things, and you got to analyze that stuff to find those good stories. So what to you makes a great story?
That is a good question.
Yeah, it's a tough one. We're getting deep. We're digging, we're digging a deeper hole over here of questions.
Yeah. Definitely one thing for me, I will say, is something that can, that tugs emotionally with me. I'm not somebody that easily will cry in movies and, or, you know, watching plays, reading books, or, and feel some of those emotions. So when I do, you know, read a script or see a movie that makes me really feel those emotions, that's definitely one aspect that makes a good story for me. I also tend to gravitate towards stories that I would say aren't really mainstream. So like, what's a topic or an issue that nobody really wants to touch for one reason or another? Either they don't think it's going to be, you know, viable financially, or there's just not an audience. And how can we maybe tell a story with that?
Mm-hmm. For sure. And that seems to be definitely kind of the one downside of the big budget kind of stuff and getting into that, if like looking in, like down the road and everything and all that kind of thing, is that, yeah, it's hard to tell all the unique stories that there are in the world, just because somebody might be like, oh, only like X amount of people are going to watch that. We're not going to make the money back for what this is going to cost. So yeah, I can definitely see how when you find those movies, they can really stand out to you. Are there any movies that kind of do stand out as far as what you're talking about, like emotionally connecting with an audience to you?
Yeah. I know one for sure would be the film I Still Believe, that came out like right before COVID last year. That was one of the few movies that actually made me cry in theaters. So that one really stood out to me.
I'm not too familiar with that one. What's that one? Like, what's just like the basic premise of it?
Yeah. So that one is the true story about Jeremy Camp, who's a Christian singer-songwriter. And he meets his wife at college, and then she comes down with a really serious form of cancer, and kind of their journey as they're dealing with all that.
For sure. Have you seen that one? Kind of reminds me of, I think it's on Disney Plus, I might be wrong, but it's the movie called Clouds, where it's this teenage boy who has cancer, but he wants to be like a singer-songwriter and all this kind of stuff. It's, that one is also very emotional. I feel like it's a, not like a similar vibe, but like I can kind of see where those types of movies can definitely pull on the heartstrings, because they're true stories. True stories always do that, because you can see that is somebody, that was someone's life, and you just watched it in an hour and a half.
Which is crazy to think about.
It's so crazy. I just can't even imagine what that would be like on the back end of having to like edit that. Like, how do you edit someone's life, or how do you tell a story of someone's life so condensed?
Yeah.
Especially if it happens over years. That's a task that I don't know if I'd ever want that burden. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
What's your thought on that, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I know there's been some true stories that I've like, that would be a fun one to make, but they've been like something that all happens over the course of like one day. So those are really easy ones to make a good story about, but it would be a very big challenge. That is for sure.
For sure. Which kind of leads us into our next question. Do great stories have to be purely original, like in your opinion, or do you think a great story can be the retelling of like a timeless classic? Like, I know, I guess for just examples here, kind of like with that, like that's an original type story because that's someone's life. Obviously, you can find similarities in other movies, but ultimately, that's an original piece of content, I would say. But then you have stories that are similar to like Cinderella or like the Disney movies that you could argue are just rehashes, or they're just like retellings and there's maybe nothing too special about them. What's your opinion on all that?
I think it can go both ways. In my opinion, I always enjoy when I'm watching something that's like completely, you know, totally new and original, just 'cause you don't know what's going to happen next. But I definitely also see where, whether it's a film trying to communicate some issue or teach some message, how doing kind of a rehash of it in a way that maybe will connect better with, you know, today's audience than the original made, you know, 50 years ago will has its place. So I guess I'm not 100%. I don't fall into either camp. Just as long as it's not like a clear, we're just trying to make a remake for money's sake. Those films I can't stand.
We've seen those. Yeah, we've seen those. That is a really good point that I guess with my critical analysis, like whenever I've analyzed anything like that, I've never really thought about the idea of, yeah, like the message, like the story itself may not be that original, but it's like the message is this idea that just needs to keep getting pushed forward. That's a good answer. I liked that. I liked that a lot. All right. So with your production company, I assume that you've kind of had a foot in both areas of being more of the behind the scenes producer role of getting everything organized and getting everything like maybe into production and maybe the post-production side of things. But I've also seen that you've done some stuff that's probably like in the actual crew, like you're running the camera or like you're setting up lights or something like that. So what to you is a greater challenge, that more producer type role or the in the trenches part of the crew role?
That is a good question.
Thank you. We pride ourselves with a few questions here.
In some ways, I would probably say the crew role, but part of that comes from I'm mainly focusing now on the producer aspect. Mm. So I'm living in that world way more than I am at times in the crew role. And so, you know, you come back to sit and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, we're using all these new lights that came out or the latest camera. And it's kind of like relearning, you know, all the new technology that's out there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I would say the crew's what I find at times harder, but I would say at the same time, I still enjoy it just as much. And like, I don't find it any less rewarding than than the producer role.
For sure. I've definitely found the crew roles are a lot more like on your feet, like always on your toes. Like you don't know exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But then like it's like with the producer stuff, it's almost like everything is like you're expected to know when things are supposed to happen, or like even if you don't actually know, like it's something where it's like, oh, that's a whole other variable that we don't have control over. Everyone is like, well, what do we do at this point? And you're like, I don't know yet. We haven't even filmed this part.
Yes. And that's definitely one of the reasons why I still keep doing the crew roles, is it's nice to get on that project where I just show up and do my job, and I can go home at night and not have to worry about the next day until call time.
Absolutely. Just very go, 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 go. Don't stop. All right. So you're kind of touching on how technology is like ever advancing and things like that. And it kind of the same applies for a lot of the ways we view films and stuff. Like back in the day, like I know we were talking about VHS recording and things like that, but back then we didn't have platforms like YouTube, Netflix, Hulu, and like all the other things out there to get media to people. It was pretty much either did movie theaters or we did like these niche short film like type competitions. So I guess how have you seen platforms like YouTube, Netflix, and Hulu and all those help this realm of short film or maybe like short television type stuff?
Mm-hmm. When it comes to short films, I guess that's almost its own conversation, because a lot of it I find comes down to what your end goal of the short film is. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously that's going to change what platform you put it on and how you go about marketing it. Definitely, though, I think there's a lot to still figure out with the TV industry and how, like Netflix and Disney Plus doing shows, how this is all going to pan out. But I definitely think I like how where it's going, and just the fact that it's so much easier even to find, you know, older TV shows, you know, that like nowadays I can go on and watch shows I grew up with, you know, on some streaming service that for the last, you know, 15 years have never even run on TV anymore because the show was canceled and everything. So yeah, it's crazy though. Like just trying to keep up with it is a full-time job in and of itself.
For sure. So I guess going back, I was interested about what you mentioned earlier about how, depending on what the outcome of your short film is, dictates, in your opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong, like if I'm speaking or putting words in your mouth. But what I heard on my end was like, in your opinion, that the short film you create and the desired outcome dictates where you put it, whether it's like a YouTube, a Netflix or Hulu type route. So I guess like, could you elaborate a bit more on that and what maybe specifies a short film to go a specific route?
Yeah. So when it comes to that, like I said, it can be a broad term. I know people obviously that they'll make short films just because they want to work with certain people. And so they come up with a project to work with those people. Others, they're trying to use it as like a pitch project for a bigger feature film or TV show they want to make, and stuff. And so just kind of knowing what your end goal is will kind of communicate who your audience is better. You know, if you're just trying to create that portfolio piece, YouTube, you know, maybe even Facebook on your, if you have like a film company page, might be the best place to do it because it's going to get it out to the most people where they can find it, and it's not going to cost people time or money to watch it as opposed to putting it on a streaming service where now you have to hope people take the time and the money to watch your film.
Fair point. Definitely, I feel like YouTube and the Facebook route, like if you have a page or a group or something, it's very easy to get it in front of people as opposed to trying to get it to the higher ups of these big companies. Like, watch my short film. And they're like, okay, we watch thousands a day. Like, we get so many of these emails.
Yes.
But yeah, like I've always heard this idea of like that Hollywood is being redefined. It's no longer this thing of everyone is knocking on their front door, but like with YouTube and Vimeo and like all these other types of things where you can put your stuff out there and kind of gain a small audience of your own. Some people are starting to now kind of say, what about trying like the side door or going like in a different way type thing. So I guess, what's your opinion on that? Do you think that there's still some merit to knocking on the front door of these big companies, or do you think it might be a better strategy for most people nowadays to develop their own audience and hope that the big companies kind of come to them?
I would guess I would say it would probably be a little bit better for people to build some type of an audience. I think just with, you know, how much easier nowadays it is for people to create films, studios and that are going to be way less likely to give you a chance if you don't have much to show for yourself yet, because it's so easy.
Yeah.
And so nowadays, like, yeah, if you can go, even if it's only a little 3-minute short film, you know, make it really good and get that following, the right distributor or studio might take more notice because they can see what you've done, and also with the internet, how it's performing. Like, is it something that's gotten 10 views on YouTube, or, you know, does it have 40,000 on Facebook and it's only been up there for a week?
For sure. It's definitely adds that credibility type of thing of that way. You're just not like, oh, put your faith in me. You can actually use numbers and analytics that YouTube and Facebook and all these other platforms provide so that, yeah, if you do want to go knock on those big doors, you could always say, I have like 10 million subscribers and my videos average this amount. Like, this could probably work for TV.
Yeah.
Like, this could probably work for a station.
Yep. And I mean,
that's awesome.
Every once in a while you have those cases where I know some people that have done that and they've been a lucky person. They've knocked on a door completely cold.
Oh, yeah.
And it's worked out for them, you know, and it's like, wow. But it's, yeah.
Yeah, that's always cool to hear those stories. And obviously everyone, I think, in our field is hoping for, whether it's a large scale or large scale for where you're at, those big doors can be hard to knock on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just whatever it takes to get those ins. Yeah, for sure. So kind of rounding out here as we get to the end of our podcast. So what's something that you've learned over the years that you'd wish you'd known when you started?
There's a lot. So
what's maybe like the big thing where for years you've realized you were like, oh, I should have been doing this the entire time. It makes everything so much better or whatnot.
I would say probably one of the biggest is, which it applies, I guess, more towards like narrative content as opposed to when you're working with like another business, but having more than just yourself at the top of the project, so that you have somebody else you have to convince, you know, to go a certain route or to spend the money in such a way. I've seen a number of projects and, you know, been on some projects where the director was also the sole producer and he would make decisions that he wanted because of his vision for the film that hurt the film on the logistical producer side. And so being able to have those other people that aren't attached to your vision and story and the way you are since you created it is probably the most helpful thing I've discovered over the years.
For sure. Plus then you just develop more connections. Like you bring on people to projects, even if it's just like a thing of, hey, can you oversee this type of thing? Or, hey, maybe I wrote the script. Can you direct this? Just because I want to work with you as a director, or I want to work with you as a cinematographer or something like that. It really does, yeah, allow for that extra connection.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Very good point. Very good point. Awesome. Well, just real quick, I want to thank you for joining us on this podcast as we're ending our time here. It's been great talking to you. There's a lot of awesome, very in-depth answers to these questions that I think, like, again, I didn't necessarily even think about right when I asked it. And then you gave an answer. I was like, oh my God, duh. But anyway, as we close out, I want to give you just a little bit of opportunity to plug any social pages or any projects you have coming up, things like that, that maybe people could get aware of, or just where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, for sure. So you can definitely look up Moving Visual Films. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And then as well, I have my own personal Instagram page. That's just Micah.Versaman. So you can look me up there. And there's not too many projects I can at least talk about right now. but I guess I will plug if there's any other people more in the producer sphere out there. I have a podcast simply called The Producer Podcast, and it's solely looking at the producing aspect of filmmaking, both narrative, corporate, kind of just covering anything and everything in that vein of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I hope our listeners got a lot out of this episode. I hope they check out all the social media pages and your podcast. It sounds awesome. Listen to a few episodes here and there. And yeah, thank you again, Micah, for joining us on Raisin Brand After Hours.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. I hope everyone enjoyed this awesome episode, and we'll see you guys next time.
Hey everybody, just wanted to say thank you so much for listening, and be sure to subscribe to stay updated on all of our new episodes. Also, make sure you check out our YouTube channel, Retro Neon Film, to see all of our creativity on display, and check out our branding and marketing podcast on the feed as well, and it's called Raisin Brand. And if you'd like to be a guest on our show in the future, just email podcast@thepixellab.co. That's podcast@thepixellab.co. Thank you again, and have a great week.